now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. So did you get enough turkey yesterday?
You know what? I'm pretty sure I'll be in a turkey coma by the time this airs.
You like turkey.
I do.
You'll be all over it.
I do. I don't know if the seraphim or whatever that's in. What was it in that turkey that makes you go to sleep? It's some hormone thing that
I know.
Makes you go to sleep.
Tryptophan.
Something like that.
Yeah, tryptophan.
I'll probably be tripped all over that.
Probably. You're speaking in the future tense.
I am.
Why is that?
Because we haven't got there yet.
See, I don't know that I'll be eating turkey yet. I think our turkey's coming Friday, to be honest. But
oh, you're doing turkey day a day late?
Yeah, we're doing day late.
We're doing it out in New Jersey.
You're going to New Jersey?
Yeah, flying out to New Jersey.
So if you haven't guessed it by now, we're recording this a bit early so we can go run away for the Thanksgiving holidays. You're, what's in New Jersey?
My dad.
Your dad's in Colorado, your dad's in New Jersey, your dad's in California. Your dad is one step ahead of the law, isn't he?
No, he lives in New Jersey.
He visits
Colorado.
And, but you grew up in Madison, Wisconsin, you grew up in Seattle, and you grew up in Fairbanks, Alaska.
I started in Germany. That's where I was a little baby.
Oh, it's all good.
I'm all over the place.
I can't keep your life story straight. Biography's got to be in the works. Autobiography, I guess.
Because you couldn't write.
I don't have a clue who you are or why you come here every week.
Yeah, but I'm leaving soon.
And why we talk to each other with microphones in our faces. I've never figured that out.
I don't know. I just normally talk to you, but I guess, there's the microphone. It's to let other people in on this conversation.
Ah, that's it.
That's it. We have an audience that loves to be a part of it.
Well, welcome back. It's good to have you here.
Thank you. Very nice. That's wonderful.
I'll miss you while you're in Jersey.
I know you will. I think we're going to go to the Macy's Parade in New York, too. I don't know if I've ever done that before, but that's apparently in the little works. So
I went to one parade in my life, big parade.
Yeah.
Wasn't worth it.
So I shouldn't really...
I'm just telling you. I don't like parades, not even the Disneyland parade, so I'm probably a bad guy to ask about this, but we went to the Rose Bowl parade one year. You know, I was so disappointed. The illusion was better than the reality.
Most are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, except for Jesus.
Well, I don't think he's an illusion. So
I know. That's why the reality is far better.
Yeah.
The reality is far better.
I mean, you see this thing on TV, and he's a little kid. And I remember the first time we saw the Rose Parade in color. That's how old I am. I'm as old as dirt. We watched it black and white for years.
Did they have TV back then, Wayne?
They did have TV, right along with the horses. But
I started with a black and white TV.
My grandparents got the first round screen color TV that we all went over on New Year's Day to watch the Rose Parade. But the flowers and all the camera shots are looking up at these floats, and they look huge. We went to it. We were sitting in the bleachers looking down, going, is that a float going by? Is that what they're showing on TV?
You were in the
Bob Uecker
nosebleed seats?
No, we weren't even that far up. But I'm just going, the scale of that thing is about half of what I thought it was.
Close-ups and cameras and all that stuff. Yeah.
So I'm thinking those balloons on the Macy's Parade, they're probably about as big as
I don't know, but I'll be able to tell you. I'll check it out for you, Wayne.
It may be as big as I bought my granddaughter for her fourth birthday. Some balloons, we blew them up, and it may just be that size. I don't know.
We'll see. We'll take the train in. We'll see the Macy's Parade. We'll see what
it was fun watching my granddaughter hold 30 helium-filled balloons in her hand.
Did it lift her off the ground?
No. We were kind of wondering how many more it would take to fly that little child, but we had her indoors, so we weren't going to lose her. But and she just...
That'd be hilarious.
To lose her would be hilarious?
No.
What do you say?
Oh, Amy. Okay.
Yeah, that's not hilarious. It's my granddaughter you're talking about. Anyway, she turned 4, the other one turned 1, so November's a good month for the
Ooh.
Jacobson clan. We get to, and my daughter turned, well, I won't tell you how much my daughter turned.
Yeah, she wasn't like that.
She'd get upset. Okay. Hi, Julie. Love you, doll. She's a faithful listener, though. She's right in there, and Amy is too. Hi, Amy.
That's all good.
It's all good.
My wife goes jogging with us. We don't go jogging, but my wife goes jogging, and we're with her in the iPod.
Oh, I get it. So,
you get exercise every day. You didn't know that.
I didn't say, is that counting for us?
I think so.
That'd be great. Let me see. I can eat lunch today if I've already had my workout this morning. Well, thank you, Kelly. Hi, Kelly.
It's all good.
Any shout-out? Any other shout-outs you want to give? Man.
New album coming out.
You got a new album?
New album. Windblown Records, our first.
Windblown is going into the record business.
Yeah, we got a record company.
Why do I not know these things?
Well, because you're busy.
I guess so.
Windblown Records.
You record it. Windblown Records.
My Beautiful One, the instrumental piano CD. It is amazing.
It's an instrumental piano. You're getting a free plug here.
Yeah, for Chris Dupre. So, it is.
Dupre. Who's Chris? Who's Chris? Tell me about Chris.
He's the guy that designed it. I met him. He's a worship leader out of Kansas City originally in Nashville. He and I have become wonderful buddies.
He's a real Jesus guy, not a worship manipulator, right?
No, this guy has got a heart of gold. I just absolutely love him. And we're doing a bunch of different creative things. We got a little book called There's the One I Love about Philip the Frog. And he's the guy that wrote that. And he's just a man of.
And that's not out yet. That won't be out until fall.
That's coming out fall.
More torture.
But we're working on it. And
more torture.
It's just absolutely delightful. And his family is just. I mean, I stayed in their home for about 3 days and we just kind of. We had outlined about 5 or 6 different kids' books and just had the most marvelous time. But he's a really gifted songwriter. And these are all previous worship songs, but that are just the piano arrangements. And they're beautiful.
Are they his songs or he's playing other songs?
They're his songs.
Okay.
And performed by Luke Hendrickson. And when I listen to this CD, when I put it in, it's like it does something to my soul. I don't listen to a lot of just piano stuff. I don't. But I do love it. And when I put this in, it's like when my life's gone a little helter-skelter, I've just turned back to this music. I sit there and just soak in it, and it just ministers to you. And I think the really cool thing we wanted to do is there's a lot of folks that are trying to understand what is it to live loved. And I just sort of feel there's something in meditative in this music that if you allow it, it could minister to you. That's written from that heart. And it's fantastic. 12 songs. It'll be available within 2 weeks.
And to get your copy, a $500 donation to the God Journey?
No. It's on the Windblown Media website. Clickable link. Our first CD release.
Wow. We're branching out at Windblown
Media.
We got
a bunch of youngsters in office that are music fans, so there'll be more coming.
Oh, wow.
That's fun.
That is fun.
So, hey. Last podcast, you brought up, you teased them about a future book coming out. We're not gonna tell them.
You're going to do that again?
No. Okay. No, but the whole concept of the fact that, you know what, fear and discipline and all that will not get us as far as it is to understand the grace, trust, and living love.
Yeah, the quote was, grace will take us far further than our own crap performance stuff ever will.
Yeah. I came across an article in the newspaper, and it was hilarious. It was Scholars View Christianity's Paradise Lost. And the basic tenor of this article was it wasn't until the 10th or the 11th century that the whole focus on the crucifixion, Christ's death and suffering, was made sort of the preeminent focus. They were doing a sort of a study through all of this, and their postulation was, you know what? We've lost that sense of paradise because there's this big focus on Christ, his death and suffering, which is as great as that is. The early church focused on celebrating his life with us. They had a living Lord that they were focused on. And it wasn't all about this payment for your sin focus. It was the fact that he's here. And I was shocked.
How did they do this research? They interviewed some people back there in the early church or the 11th century?
They had a time machine.
I'm just kind of curious what research they did on this.
It was more of a historical look in terms of the images that artwork that was used throughout the centuries. And the focus on Christ's death, his crucifixion, becomes really prominent in the 10th and 11th centuries. They kind of pin this thing on Charlemagne a little bit.
Charlemagne?
Yeah, they kind of nail him.
Oh, there you go. Constantine usually gets all the blame.
Yeah, but that's in the 300s.
We're just spreading around the blame.
Yeah, I mean, they sort of tag him as, you know, here we go, focusing where after Charlemagne, killing, suffering, and dying in the name of Christ began to represent the highest honor for Christians. And he's going like,
is this kind of a pre the Crusade kind of thing? Is that about when the Crusade started?
Yeah, it's not exactly a profoundly long article, but what was so amazing was they basically were talking about a desire to rekindle the early church's focus on the fact that they served a living Lord. This is a secular newspaper.
Yeah.
I'm going, this is one of the best clear teachings of truth. Because I do think the biggest problem we have is people are looking at the cross, and as opposed to that being a source of triumph and a place of freedom, it's a total downer. For most people, it's the, oh, gee, I'm sorry I caused you that. And it's a focus on his death and suffering. And there isn't a sense of, guess what? The resurrection, it really happened. He's alive. And he's okay. He's happy even. And, I mean, we don't have that. I mean, there's a dour sort of somber attitude towards Christianity, which is, oh, yeah. And I'm just going like, gosh, it was so bizarre to see this in the Sunday paper going like, that's so true. I think it's profound.
Yeah, if the research is true that up until, what, 10th or 11th century, the focus is on the life of Christ and the risen Christ, and we're excited to be in him, and that all shifted, because I think most of the imagery that you think of now when you think of religion, you are thinking of the crucifix, you are thinking of Christ on the cross, the whole Passion movie, that the symbolism and the imagery that we like to use is of these very evocative, tortured moments for Christ, and I have wondered at times, you know, if you had a child that died a very horrible death, maybe tortured overseas in some, you know, drug cartel, whatever, I don't think those are the pictures you'd have hanging around your house all the time.
You wouldn't. I mean, they were basically saying that during the first millennium, first thousand years, Christians filled their sanctuaries with images of Christ as a shepherd, a teacher, a healer, an enthroned God, an infant, a youth, a bearded elder. I mean, well, but like, he's never dead.
That's like the 12-square gospel.
No, it is. Yeah.
Too many images
that's
there.
Yeah, it's 12-square.
4-square only is 4.
But the point is, they were not showing him as dead. If he was shown and the cross was there, he was revealed as the resurrected Lord standing in front of it, not hanging on it.
Hmm.
And then from the 10th century on, the predominant images is him dead on the cross, in suffering. And you're just going like, that is profound when you do look at the Crusades. You look at the timing of that, you're just like, gosh.
We need to motivate people to die. So what better way?
Which is it's bizarre, but I think that, you know, most people, they still are relating, whether it's like they have crucifix images hanging around the house. Most people are not relating to Jesus as if he is here now with me.
Yeah.
There's no present tense sense of relationship and fellowship with this man, Christ Jesus. One of the things I so absolutely loved in the shack was the sense of the present tense relationship that we could share with Christ. Through the power of the Holy Spirit, we actually have access to a tangible friendship that isn't some, weird thing. It's real.
Well, and isn't that the message of Acts, the letters of Paul? They talk about what the cross purchased. But what the cross purchased was an ongoing relationship with the risen Christ. That's what the cross purchased.
Yeah.
It's James or Peter and John at the temple gate saying, this same Jesus whom you crucified healed this guy.
Yeah.
We're not talking about, oh, it's just a dream of a guy. We're following some memory of somebody who was wonderful when he lived with us. The early church did have the sense of Christ with us, the living Christ in us, among us, all that good stuff. We've lost that.
We have. And even, our approach to healing and those kinds of things, it's sort of like from a payment that Jesus made on the cross, we now get somehow this, you know, benefit deferred from that, as opposed to the sense of
a deferred benefit.
He's here. He's here with us now. He's healing. As opposed to it's that thing that, I mean, the whole judicial approach to the cross, trying to understand it from a standpoint of, well, there's these set of wrongs and these accusations, and they're all true, and we're in a mess, but Jesus decided to pay the penalty for us. And it's like, as true as some of those things are, a focus, if that's the only understanding of it, leaves you with that sense of his death, the payment, and the rules are the greatest focus.
Well, I read a review yesterday somebody had sent me about the shack, and it was a fairly negative review. And the whole last part of the review was, what's all this focus about relationship about? This isn't about relationship. It's about, here are the rules, follow the rules. God's given us his scriptures. We're just to follow what they say. And that's when I say I think we've missed the power of the incarnation. I think the whole idea of God with us, God living among us through the physical presence of Jesus Christ in the flesh, and then after the resurrection, the real presence of Christ now with us, not in heaven somewhere, waiting for us to keep enough rules.
He still has humanity.
He's still with us, in us. And I had a great discussion with this with my friend Bob, who's writing the communion book that we had on a few podcasts ago. I was with him in Virginia recently, and he just said, you know, I think that's so stupid, that whole Jesus lives in my heart stuff. He said, you know, how many kids actually think Jesus running around their heart somewhere? I just thought, yeah, I remember thinking that as a kid. Man, duck the blood, man. Watch for the valves. You could get hurt in there. I mean, we've so characterized that instead of, it really isn't Jesus lives inside of me like, you know, a little piece of Jesus hangs out here, but that I am inside of him and he's inside of me is really talking about the nature of the relationship. It's not talking about geography. It's not talking about where he's located.
You're talking about spirit communion.
Yeah.
That reality.
And that we're living inside of a relationship with him. He's living inside of a relationship with us. And that I don't say you can read the New Testament, you know, behold, I stand at the door and knock, and I want to come in and sup with you and you with me. The whole invitation of the New Covenant was to have a relationship with the resurrected Christ. It wasn't to
follow a genuine person.
Yeah, and it wasn't to follow a religion called Christianity and keep all the rules and rituals.
Nope.
And that's what's, I think, just drives me insane. If that's what Christianity has become after 2,000 years, we're just following the rules and rituals. And if you're doing that, you got to have an angry, tortured son at the front of that, because you're trying to motivate people based on their fears or based on their God's worthy. I've got to give back to him because he's given so much for me. All that really keeps people from the intimate relationship of God with me. I wake up in him in the morning. When I woke up this morning, I am in him in the struggles of my life. I'm in him in the joys that I experience. All of that's in him. And when you take that away from Christianity, honestly don't think you have anything worthy left.
Oh,
not for me. Not anymore.
No, I mean, it's so bizarre. I think we've devolved into, you know, here we're the sheep of his pasture. And as opposed to having a relationship with the shepherd, all we got is a bunch of sheepdogs barking at the herd.
Wow.
They're just, I mean, they're trying to drive the herd where? I don't know.
They know.
I don't know that they know. I've talked to a bunch of them. I used to be one.
They know.
Just a bunch of barking sheepdogs. They know. They drive them.
No,
right,
I wasn't going for that. But I was going to say, it wasn't to Christ. As much as we use that rhetoric, we talk, what we do is we make...
bark them into the pen.
We make the religion of Christianity essential. The ethics, the creeds, those are essential. Relationships sort of optional. Maybe you get it. Maybe the serious ones get it. Maybe the anointed ones get it. But to me, that's what it was like growing up. You hear about, for me, my first touch with the charismatic renewal before it became this hedonistic suck up to materialism. And I don't want to be pejorative, but I don't mean that pejoratively.
No, of course you don't. I never heard that summary of the charismatic movement. Okay.
But for a family that had grown up, that Christianity was the thing you go practice on Sunday morning, and you do these rituals, and it's pretty, it's a lot of work, and you're trying to...
Yep, better be there.
You're trying to pretend you're better than you are, and all that stuff. And then they found out that the Holy Spirit wanted to speak to us. Want to make Jesus known. To me, it wasn't about speaking in tongues, and it wasn't about all those other things. It was about,
there's a person here.
Like I joked last week, or the guy was saying, you know, I asked God, I'm just speaking like you speak to no one. He said, why, you want to build a boat? I love the freedom that we have to actually relate to this God.
Yeah.
And I know people are so worried. Are you going to trivialize him to do that? I said,
No, not really. You personalize him.
When the God of the ages wants to hang out with me and say stuff that at times tickles my funny bone. And I've had those moments. I've had moments where I just, the strangest little thought. And I'll hear a voice from the wall, so I know people are going to get into the whole construct. But I do, after just an engagement with him, you can write it out like a conversation. Yeah. I said this, he said this. It doesn't always, for me, happen that way. It happens much more, this little thought runs through your head. You go, now that's hilarious. And, I mean, the last time he got me was in Germany when I had that kind of a funny moment. I just had kind of a rough trip in and not sleeping well, sleeping on a hard floor or crawled up into a little love seat thing and trying to get some sleep after missing a night or so. And I'm not upset about it. It was one of those moments when I like this you. I like this. I like the fact that you're not, which here's the old Wayne. I fly all this way to help these people. And you couldn't even provide a bed for me tonight. A place where I get some decent rest, because tomorrow I've got to speak all day long to people. And I've got to be awake and alert. And I'm laying there going, this is hilarious. I can't sleep. So, God, you're going to have to give me grace tomorrow to get through the day. And I really do think inside this relationship with Jesus, there are moments of just enjoying him, absolutely, enjoying his humor. I know people ticked off in the shack when Papa's making jokes about stuff, and like, again, we've ruined God. And if that's the God you serve, great. If you've got a God that's kind of just wouldn't spill the pancake batter.
He's always serious.
I had one guy in Richmond say, I stopped reading the book when he spilled the pancake batter, when Papa did. And I said, really? Yeah, I said, you don't remember that Max spilled the pancake batter the morning he lost his daughter? What does that mean? I'm going, explore it. Is it just God being careless, or is it God finding a way into Max's soul, finding a way into that relationship? And that's the Jesus I know. The Jesus I know wouldn't spill the pancake batter because he's clumsy. He would spill it because it'd be fun and give him a chance to wash Papa's feet while he's at it. So, you know.
Chance to redeem something that was painful.
Yes. Do we have a God that wants to be that intimately involved in the things we live in?
I think we absolutely
do.
And to me, you know, the whole idea of cheapening God is like, you know what, to make him this serious, dour, unfun personality, it's not me who's cheapened him.
No. I agree.
You've taken all the color out of this thing.
I'm on this page. That. Yes, absolutely.
And I just sort of feel like to reduce Christianity down to a herd and a bunch of sheepdogs barking us to some kind of pasture and keeping us enclosed in some sort of pen, and to not have a relationship with the one shepherd, I don't know what you've done, but this is completely wrong.
Or even defining that, if we allow people to have that relationship, we define it with such fear and responsibility, and that it's, as Darren said when he was with us, if you wouldn't have a friend like that, you wouldn't have a God like that. I mean, I just think that's where it ends up.
I do love that, but it's like, you know, it's not so much me trying to come up with the image of God I like, and then I'll worship that.
No, I don't think that's what he was saying.
It's the fact that, you know what, he is altogether good, and we have a whole bunch of residue thoughts that are altogether bad, that we have glossed with religious terms and terminology because we've used them as manipulators of behavior. And they're the worst tools to use to produce a relationship.
Yeah, that's when I think about the article you read, because I've had a chance to be in Europe some and tour big chapels and cathedrals and painted ceiling things. And all of those things from this, the one I was in Albi, France, back the 12th century, the whole judgment of God through the course of human history down to these 17-foot-high panels in front of how the damned are punished in hell. The lustful people are punished in a certain way, and the greedy people are punished in another way. And you look at the whole concept, this whole thing, is to induce such a fear in people to conform to what the church demands. That's how that was all set up in the Middle Ages. And you would need a crucified Christ to keep that's focus number one. Sit in a building that was intentionally designed to dwarf you. For you to sit in a building and the ceiling is 100 yards high. Who needs a building with a 300-foot ceiling? The whole purpose in designing the cathedral was to reduce the individual to a sense of insignificance in the face of not even God, it was in the face of the church, so you would do what you were told. That all fits that. That fits that historical reality of we traded the intimacy with Christ for the austerity of religion.
Yeah.
And the fear of religion and the distance of religion. I remember one guy who I actually respect some of what he's written, but I heard him say one day when he talks about doing these evening matin services in the cathedrals of Europe and in England and
Matan? So,
matan is the evening ritual.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I always thought matan was French for morning, so who knows? But anyway, this was in England. And he said, no, virtually nobody comes to these things. And going, so what do you guys do? Here's what he said. We believe. This is a noted theologian. I'd give you his name, but I'm not sure the quote's exactly accurate. But pretty close. He said this. We believe that even if no one came, it's the building that worships God.
What?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Even the rocks cry out.
Now we're down to that. That's why they built them out of rocks and stones, because people aren't going to. So you can trust the rocks and stones to do
okay.
But that was.
I'm here to fellowship with the building.
I was just in one in Switzerland. We climbed to the top of one. And you know the ugly gargoyles they put on top of those things? And I'm not
they
really...
pour flaming oil out of those.
What?
Flaming oil.
Not when I was there.
Okay.
See
okay. I'm sorry. You missed that one.
They pour flaming oil out of the gargoyles?
That's what they would do. That's how they have a spout. Yeah.
Flaming oil.
Yeah.
200-300 feet down to the ground for what? People under there?
Scare them.
Bad people?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why would you have a bunch of demons on your roof?
Missed your Bible reading. Missed your Bible reading this morning? Oh, they didn't let him read the Bible back then.
It's up there on the walls.
And you sit there and go, even if this building is worship, it's a pretty frightful thing. If Jesus became
demons on the ceiling.
If Jesus came to reconcile people to himself, why do we make that trade? Why do we keep making that trade?
I don't know.
That's
yeah, that to me is the thing the passage when it says, "My sheep know my voice, the voice of a stranger they will not follow." You just sit there and just like, okay, now wait a minute here. That's Jesus speaking of himself towards us. And the naturalness of relationship is what he's talking about. And the fact that, you know what? My sheep know me. They know my voice. They're not going to follow the voice of another. You sit there, it's like, okay, if I do the math in reverse, what in the world is going on? Most believers I know have never heard the voice of God. They've been taught.
Or don't think they have.
Yeah, they've been taught as if, oh, that's bizarre and not to be trusted. And I'm just going, how do you have relationship without some form of communication?
Yeah.
The naturalness of relationship has been left out of people's, quote, conversion.
It's the scriptures, brother. We have everything we need right here in the scriptures. So we don't need Jesus to speak to us today. It's all right here in the book.
That's right. And if you wrote me letters and you told me how great it was and all I did was relate to your letters, but you were right there and I never talked to you, would that be strange?
I'm thinking we'll do the podcast that way next time. I'll write you a letter. You write me a letter. I write you a letter.
There you go.
It'll be pretty boring for people listening in, but though.
Hard to call it a conversation.
Hard. Difficult, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there isn't any present tense reality.
There's no context.
You don't have a relationship with someone that there isn't a present tense reality.
But here's the problem with the verse you quoted. Because I know people listening to this saying, I've never heard his voice. So obviously I'm not a sheep. I mean,
beat yourself with the stick coming and going.
No, they take the religious thing right back the other way and not see that it's still through that same religious lens. But if I'm looking and saying, oh, so I don't know his voice. I've never heard his voice. So therefore, I'm not one of his sheep. Wouldn't be the conclusion I'd want people to get to.
Nor do I think it's the conclusion of what's going on.
No, I don't think it's reality because I think all of his sheep have heard his voice. And yet we've learned...
You wouldn't even be looking in the Bible for Bible verses about sheep if you didn't have some sense that he started calling you.
True. But I think what we have had is people... who've heard Jesus speak to them. Something like, well, you want to build a boat too? And they've said, it can't be Jesus. And they've heard all this angry rhetoric of God being, you know, perform or die. That, they go, okay, well, that's God's voice. That's it. And whenever they actually hear God's voice, they go,
that's just myself.
That can't be him.
Yeah, that's just me.
I can't do that. Yeah. We had a guy we had lunch with last week, a guy visiting us from Idaho, was it? He shared a neat little, I thought this was a fabulous insight. He said when he reads The Shack and then read some of the pushback on it from people that go, that's not the God of the Bible. What he thought of was like people, if they spent, like it's been 150 years since Abraham Lincoln. So there's all these biographies and all these scholarly studies so that people feel like now we've got Abraham Lincoln really figured out.
We got him down.
But if Abraham Lincoln actually showed up somewhere and we could interview him, most of those scholars would walk away saying, no, that's not him. It's got to be an imposter because he's not like anything we said he was like. That is what religion has done to this incarnational resurrected Christ. We have so put him into these religious boxes, put these tones in his voice, put this anger in his disposition. We've separated him from any reality. And if Jesus walked into the room today and talked to some of those scholars, now, some of them get it. I realize, I'm not painting with that broad of a brush. But for these scholars that say, gosh, God isn't like that, he's like this, they would spend an hour with him and walk away saying, that couldn't have been him.
Well,
Jesus wasn't like that.
The scholars in Jesus' day.
Same thing.
The same thing. And it's like, so are we anti-scholarship? No. Scholarship is not a substitute for relationship.
Particularly, this is a good scholarship right here. It tells us we walked away from relationship.
We don't have a living Lord. We have tools of manipulation. Fear and guilt. And is there suffering? Yeah. We are actually promised that in this world you will have some trouble.
Yep.
Okay? I don't have any problem with that. The great news is I'm not by myself. I'm not alone.
Yeah.
And I don't have to perform for his love. I can start from that position. It's just a much different life to live.
Yeah. Let me read this letter to you. This is a perfect way to cap this off. Got this a couple weeks ago, wrote to you and I think you got a copy. Oh, maybe not. at least I did. But he wrote it. This is for you and Brad. He says, I've been a follower of Christ for 12 years. I met the Lord when I was 14 years old, so he's 26. Regular high school story, involved in a group called Young Life, tried to follow the Lord through then in college. I've come to a dead end in Christ. I've been around the have a quiet time, do this, do that idea my entire walk. I know the truth of Jesus, but presently it stops there. I have felt dead inside for the last few years. A numb, call-iced heart. I don't know what a call-iced heart is. Must be a typo. I do not feel much anymore. I'm not trying to sound dramatic, but that's the reality I live in. I want what the Lord has to offer. But when I am completely honest with myself, I have not seen the joy of the Lord. I have not seen the peace of God. I know that I have some nice times when I'm on a mountaintop and everything is great, but it doesn't last. I'm tired of playing the game. I've gone way too long filling the part. I think that I've gotten to the point where I think that God is going to strike me for what I have not done. I feel like I'm in the middle of shame management or guilt or fear management as well. I think that I'm so paralyzed in my walk with Christ that I'm unable to move forward. My heart is not there. I do not have the desire to pray, spend time in the scriptures, or trust God with my life. In the end, I know the truth and believe it. I'm just unable to follow it. Is there any words that you have? I would appreciate it.
Wow, I think a lot of people
live there. A lot of people are here. That's why I read this thing.
A lot of people live there.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, I think that
a lot of people who listen to this, listen to it and hear hope in our voices and going, gosh, I'd like to have the life Brad and Wayne have with Christ.
Sure.
But I don't. It's beyond me. I can't get it. Can't find it. You've only been listening 5 weeks, so this guy's new to this bit of the dialogue. But what do we say? What do you say?
I look at the fact that, you know what, to be able to write that letter is not some admission of, oh, it's terrible. It's like, you know what, that's that glorious place of honesty and availability that says, I'm longing for something more and I don't have it. That means the pretending's gone. Hmm. That means the performing is over. I think the relationship can come. And the great thing is you don't have to fabricate that. All you have to do is welcome that and say, hey, God, I don't know how to do that. I know you do. You designed me. You know how to communicate. You created all the parts of me to actually communicate.
Yeah.
You know how to talk and how in a way I can hear. Help me perceive your presence. I think when you have false expectations that it's a voice over your right ear outside of your head, those can really be stumbling stones of just going, you know what? No, I don't think that's it.
Yeah.
If you can, in that place of honesty, remain available and beckoning, that says, hey, you know what? I think the greatest news about this relationship with Jesus is he comes and finds me. I don't remember the lost sheep finding the shepherd.
Yeah, what I like about this, and I know people who write this kind of stuff to us or to me feel like I'm stuck at a place where I'm lost. And I read a letter like this, pretty much you just talk about, the process has already begun.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be here if God was already not rewriting things in your heart. During this period of time, and I'm sure we could have 200 people write us the same letter saying, I'm right where this guy is. Help me. We could also have about 500 people write us a letter that would have written this letter a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, that would say, I finally gave up trying. and reality crept into my life when I wasn't looking. I really do think this isn't, how do I fix this tomorrow morning? It's waking up.
Yeah.
I think it was exactly what you just said. Father, here I am. You know how to get through to me. I love you. I want you to be in this context with me. I'm disillusioned about everything and not grateful. Would you take me on? And then just walk in that reality. See that God right now is not necessarily speaking wonderful things to you that you're perceiving, but he's dismantling things that have kept you from hearing and identifying. The dismantling process is an important part of this process. It will get wonderful later. Right now, let it for what it is, just the honesty rise, conversations with others that stimulate the journey. Keep in focus that what I'm perceiving may not be reality. I think that's really is important for people to keep that suspension. Just because I feel it doesn't mean it's real. It's real for me in the moment, but in that feeling now, I'm looking for God to be bigger than that and take me on to something more life-giving.
I mean, I don't think there's any substitute for reality. And I think that the truth is if we have the capacity to be as honest as his letter is, I don't think you're going to be duped when the shepherd really shows up. And I think will you have the courage to remain available without downshifting back into old patterns?
Yeah.
I don't have five things to do, because I don't think you can do anything to make relationship happen. I think there's the essential ingredient of availability. 18 years ago, I felt exactly that.
Yeah.
And I remember just feeling about as empty as I possibly could in the midst of a thriving little church environment. And I'm just going like, man, I feel about dead as a doornail. And all that was going through my head was a little song that they sung in church that morning. Here I am, wholly available. As for me, I will serve the Lord. That was the chorus. That stuck in my head, and I was appreciative of it because I sat there going like, that's the only thing I really know how to say. I'm not liking the Lord. I'm not feeling like I'm serving the Lord. I don't feel like I get it, but I feel like there's something real out there that I don't possess. And so I fed it back. And I just quietly in my own head sang it over and over. Here I am, wholly available. And it sank in somewhere in the course of doing that, not even knowing I'm doing anything that allowing the ache in my heart to be voiced and real. He met me in a way I didn't grow up in a church that validated hearing him, knowing him, seeing him for a person. I didn't know anything about the Holy Spirit or gifts. I grew up in a place that wanted to win people to Jesus and read your Bible, and so I got sermons down, I got going to services down, I got inviting people down, but I didn't have the relationship thing reinforced. And somewhere in the midst of all that, in a wonderful and personal way to me, God showed up in an inexplicable way. And it changed everything because it's like, oh, reality showed up.
Yeah.
Not the pre-suggested way that God should show up.
Yeah.
At first I was going like, I didn't know what was happening. I was seeing something that I wasn't sure I could see, but it was a real encounter. But you're just going like, because it wasn't prescribed for me, it's been forever etched as something that really came from him and has borne the fruit of renewed relationship. What I knew as a little boy was all of a sudden brought back to simple friendship realities of going, oh, you're back. And that was just strange language for me because I'm going like, I don't ever remember when you went away. And I'm pretty sure you didn't, but man, I became numb.
Yeah.
When that little like tart thing he's talking about,
yeah.
I don't know what that is, but I know what it is to be physically alive, but totally void of feeling or numbed out going like, man, I feel like the land of the zombies. And I just know availability that's matched with honest longing. God, he dwells in the high and lofty things and the broken and the contrite of heart.
Yep.
That sense of personal bankruptcy.
And when you agree, it's helpful when we engage this process of saying, God, make yourself known to me. I want to know you. I want to hear you. I want to see you. that we don't put a time expectation on it. It may have been a day for you singing a chorus. It might have been 6 months for somebody else. It all depends on what God's untangling in us. But if you can see where you are, this guy has written this letter and others who feel like I'm in that same place, where you are is a great place to be. The honesty that you've been brought to is really the most one of the most difficult parts of this process, to come to the point
of the courage of being able to write that.
And say, I'm not where I want to be, but I'm hungry. And I hope it's real. I know the rules, so I can follow the rules well enough, but now that's not enough for me anymore. That's great stuff. That's God dismantling.
I think Jesus gets totally jazzed at that moment, going like, great.
Yeah.
I like this you.
And let, and let the wind, let the breath, let it come on you when it comes. Just love him. Open your life to him. Ask him to show you. Ask him to keep dismantling. Just live inside your awareness that God is making himself known to you. And then you'll begin to see glimpses of it. Sometimes it's, for some people, it's pretty cathartic. There's some big emotional moment that launches a new journey. For other people, it's just kind of like little glimpses of things. Just start working their way in over time. And they find themselves in months, weeks perhaps, living in the space of, ooh, I know him now. I recognize him. And I hear the heartbeat. And I have these thoughts in my head now that may have been his all along. And I'm just dumb enough to think they were mine. And
yeah, I think one of the most valuable things someone else helped and did in my life is they asked the question of, you know, what do you see God doing in your life? It was based on the assumption, I'm sure he's at work.
Right.
And so it was a sense of, how do you see God working in your life? And it's a totally different question to come from a sense of, how do I perceive what is happening, as opposed to, well, I don't think anything's happening. I mean, that just feels like sort of a walled-off, hurt, disappointed reaction.
Yeah.
As opposed to the chance that, you know, in those places, I've been just amazed at how God can bring somebody alongside that I didn't know. I didn't know how to go find.
Yeah.
But when I needed, he somehow brought someone alongside that could midwife a little bit, that just knew a little more, that helped me see what I couldn't see on my own.
Yeah, two powerful things to underscore there. I think one is the fact that if you're in this place, ask God to give you an older brother, older sister. Yeah. Not a religious freak who's just going to put more shame management.
Now, go ahead, speak in tongues.
Not more shame management stuff, but somebody you just bounce your relationship off of, just like we do here, just to be able someone to talk to, not someone to become dependent upon, but just to talk to. The other thing, when he says this, and I thought of this when I read, I have not known the joy of the Lord. I have not seen the peace of God. Part of me says, I don't think that's true. I'm sure you have. I'm sure in this place it's hard to see. I've had people tell me, when I was a pastor, remember this one time I was in somebody's hospital room, and they were all upset, and they were saying, you know, I hadn't come to visit them. I'd been out of town, which was part of why I hadn't been there. But I had heard updates from people. So-and-so had been by there. So-and-so had been by there. I knew about 10 people that had been by that hotel, that hospital room. So when I was staying with that person, I said, you know what, Wayne, no one's come to see me since I've been here. I said, really? So yeah, no one. And I just so lonely. And, you know, you weren't here. And I said, listen, I understand loneliness. I understand maybe I couldn't be here when you thought I should be here. I wasn't around, actually. The other thing is, wasn't Marty here? Wasn't Bob here? Was Ted here? And I started listing the names, and they're like, gosh, there have been a lot of people here. But in despair.
In that moment of pain, you couldn't see it.
I don't think they were lying. I don't think he was lying to me to manipulate me. I think here, the same thing. Have you known the joy of the Lord? I bet you have. Have you known the peace of God? I bet you have. You've lost sight of it now, so you're wondering if those were ever valid back there, but they were. And they were God beckoning you into a greater relationship with him. If you did what I did in those moments when God would make himself known in some ways, and I was in a whole religious construct, I'd just double up my religious efforts hoping it would get better. It was me walking away from the relationship to perform. So I lost sight of the relationship he was already building with me. And that's where the mentality has to come back to. I may feel this way today, but you're in a lot better place than you think you are. Just keep opening your heart to Jesus and asking him to make himself known to you. And he will lift up your countenance.
Yeah.
You will see.
One of the things I did when I was kind of stuck in that sort of place of feeling like abandoned and all that other stuff is I had one of those, like, honest-to-God moments where it's like, you know what? I am going to do this. I'm going to bring my complaint to you. I really feel like in these moments, boom, 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 where were you, God? And I did. It's like it wasn't some audacious issue of pride. It was like, guess what, God? If I'm being honest, I really wanted to know where you were. And I, with the imprint of the memories I had, I don't remember you being there. I remember that feeling really painful and alone. And I don't think this is some recipe, but graciously, God gave me a parade of memories. He replayed a lot of those scenes that I had brought up to him, and he showed me where he was. And he was near, but oftentimes, because of my pain, my little whatever, I'm looking through this little knothole of my issues, and I couldn't see the full thing. Okay. And I had no idea he was right there. And in that moment of pain, I wasn't really reaching out to him. I was reacting to my pain and complaint. And I think that the two are the same. I don't think God forces himself on us. And I think he's oftentimes there caring for me, even if I don't understand it. I love that. But that was a really healing thing. Yeah. He brought a parade of memories. And this whole thing about Thanksgiving, I do think that we do enter his courts with Thanksgiving. To be able to remind myself of the moments of God's activity does lift me out of my pit. It's not a performance thing.
Yeah, it's not a discipline
thing. It's a truth renewing thing.
It's embracing the reality that he's put in our hearts.
Yeah. So go eat some more turkey.
Okay.
Traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.